We have too much to talk about. Some Mariner named Randy, a very cool no-hitter. Garrett Crochet wants his assurances. Mason Miller messes up his pinky. The Mets can't stop winning. And Brandon Belt is doing what? All on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that sleeps less than Mariners general manager Jerry DePoto. I'm Jake Mintz, that's George Huesterman, and we both know that Jerry is actually the president of baseball operations.
Yeah, that is correct. Mr. Pobo himself, Trader Jerry, has made another move, the 170th trade of his Mariners tenure, and we are, of course, going to talk about that. But because this might be the most that has happened between a Wednesday and Friday episode that I can remember in quite some time, we are not even going to begin, Jake, with the Randy Arozarena trade, because there was a no-hitter yesterday. And while, you know, we usually say, call me when it's a perfect game, we are going to start with the Dylan Cease no-hitter. But yes, we will talk about Randy to Seattle, which happened while Jake was snoozing and I was almost snoozing, but stayed up an extra 3 hours because of it. We have another trade between the Diamondbacks and the Marlins. Garrett Crochet has some interesting thoughts about his future, which totally makes sense, but might not actually happen. Then we got a lot else to get to, of course, including the good, the bad, the ugly. And yes, we did watch the Mets and Braves last night. I mean, we're going to get to the Mets later on during good, bad, ugly, but like, you were there. So like, do you want to at least offer like 30 seconds on just that game?
All time single. We often talk about how in baseball, one player can't take over the game like they can in basketball.
It's pretty hard.
However, Ramon Laureano last night, that was hero ball at its finest. Get out of the paint. Ramon is coming through. Enormous base running blunder in the top of the 10th. Just biffs a fly ball in the bottom of the 10th for the walk-off. Horrible loss for the Braves. Huge win for the Mets, who are now a half game back in the wild card. But we must talk about Dylan freaking Cease, who threw a no-hitter. And for those of you new to the game, that is when you don't allow a hit, when there are no hits by the opposing team. It took him 114 pitches. He got through all nine of the innings that were in this game. And it is both notable and not particularly shocking. Jordan, you wrote about Dylan Cease over at Yahoo Sports, so I'm going to kick the rock to you.
So last week, I was like, wow. So Dylan Cease had this awesome start before the All-Star break. And I was like, he's kind of doing it. Like, this is what we wanted Dylan Cease to be. Like, and no one's really talking about him. You know, obviously wasn't at the All-Star game. He wasn't great in May and June. So the ERA has been kind of meh. And so I went and talked to him in Cleveland a week ago today. And I was like, yeah, all right, what's going on? So I chatted with him. And then the next morning, I had COVID. And I was like, oh no, did I give Dylan Cease COVID? Again, I tested negative on Friday before I went to the ballpark. But like Saturday morning, I woke up and I was like, one, I feel like crap. Two, did I give Dylan Cease COVID? Now, he was scheduled to start last Saturday. Now, the rest of that day, I was like, oh God, like, please don't get scratched, Dylan Cease. Like, I'm going to feel so bad if I have ruined the start of Dylan Cease second half, whatever. Anyway, right? And then Dylan Cease last week in Cleveland, amazing. Seven innings, one hit, 10 strikeouts, one of the best starts of the season. And I was like, whew, okay, well, he's clearly fine. All is well.
Have you picked up a baseball since you contracted COVID? Maybe one of the symptoms of the new variant is throwing absolute cheddar cheese.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I'll have to give that a shot maybe when I see you next week, see if I'm throwing, 15 miles an hour harder. But anyway, so then Dylan Cease looks awesome in Cleveland. I wasn't able to attend that game, but I was like, okay, cool. So then this week, I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to write about Dylan Cease. He looks great. And I kind of lost track of when his next start was going to be. And then suddenly on Wednesday when I was going to write, I was like, oh, wait a minute. He's starting at noon tomorrow. Okay, well, I guess this will maybe have to wait. Then yesterday, the game gets delayed, right? And I'm like, okay, is he going to still pitch in this game? And this is like a really wild situation, right? You do not ever see rain delays in the first inning. This is not something that happens, right? Normally, either the game gets delayed before it starts, or you play, you know, 3, 4, 5 innings, and then the rain shows up, right? But because it's DC in the summer, there's weird stuff that happens, and the storm shows up in the middle of the top of the first, and they pause the game, they delay it for an hour and a half, and I guess Dylan Cease, who had already warmed up, I'm sure it was a very tough decision for Mike Shildt, basically had to decide, like, listen, he feels fine, we're going to go for it. You know, if we do a bullpen game today, we're already in kind of a mess pitching situation. So we're just going to hope for the best, send him out there. And he just starts cruising and he starts cooking. He gets through 7. It's like, oh, maybe he's going to come out. And then he gets the job done. Career high 114 pitches and a no hitter. And while we'll get to why it wasn't surprising, what was your experience of the no hitter yesterday?
Oh, I mean, I wasn't watching at all. I was napping
because I still had COVID.
Yeah.
It's
important to be honest with the listening public. I was picking up a suit for my wedding. I was not locked into the noon start Padres Nats game. I just don't like ball enough. I think that's the problem. Yep. And then when I walked into the Citi Field media gate, there was a television on, and there's Dylan Cease having thrown a no hitter. Good article up on at The Athletic from Dennis Lynn about it. He has a great detail that during this rain delay, Dylan Cease was just riding the exercise bike to keep his heart rate up. And, you know, that's something as somebody addicted to cycling, I stand that decision. So hats off to Dylan Cease for getting the watts out, for really pushing pedals, pushing P so that he could get back out there and dominate. But you mentioned that moment in the 7th inning, and I kind of want to just harp on that for a second. So he's at, you know, his pitch count's in the 90s. And in this day and age, guys don't throw 130 pitches in a game, right? And particularly for the Padres, it is clear that Dylan Cease is the best pitcher they are employing right now. They gave up quite a bit to get him during spring training from the Chicago White Sox. If San Diego makes the playoffs, Dylan Cease is the person they want starting the first game, particularly given his amazing run of starts recently, even before the start, right? And so there's legitimate concern about Dylan Cease throwing that deep into the game. Now,
and I just want to mention, it's a close game and the Padres need to win every game that they can, right? Like, correct. It's not like they were up by, remember, the last time Dylan Cease was going for no hitter against the Twins, they were up by like 15 runs or something.
Yeah.
So like this was still a close enough game to where you're still managing it very seriously.
And their closer, Robert Suarez, is just an absolute monster.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like he'll get the three outs.
They have options there at the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Cease comes in after the 7th. Manager Mike Shildt shakes his hand and is like, good job. And Cease is like, yeah, I don't know about that, dog. I don't think so. And he kind of fights to stay in. He makes the point that his high pitch count on the season was 113, which was still another 20 pitches away. Shildt then turns to Joe Musgrove, who's like standing right there. And Musgrove's like, stuff looks good to me. And Shildt, after the game, had an amazing quote. This is in Dennis Lynn's article. I look over and Joe's like, stuff's pretty good. Well, you know, he's thrown one. He knows what this looks like. So anyway, we let him ride. And I think that's like, heck yeah, dude. That's what it should be. Shildt, just let your big dog eat.
And shouts out to Joe Musgrove, right? Who threw the first no-hitter in Padres history. And if we're not for him, there would be no one there that would have any idea what to do, right? I mean, my gosh.
And by the way, is renting out his guest house to Dylan Cease. That is where Dylan Cease is living right now. It's on amazing. Joe Musgrove's property at the guest house. These dudes are tight. And so Musgrove is willing to fight for Cease. Would he have done that for a different pitcher? Who's to say? So they let him go back out there. He has a quick 8th inning, close enough to send him back out for the 9th, gets the last 3 outs. And hell yeah, dude. Like, no hitters. People hate on him because they aren't perfect games. He did walk 3 batters, I believe. But this was such a dominant performance from a pitcher who should have a no-no. Like, he is the type of guy who has gotten so close so many times and worked deep into games with so few hits that, like, Dylan Cease having a no-hitter on his resume feels very correct to me.
Exactly. And that's the stat that I found when I wrote about this that I just wanted to share here, because he, before yesterday, 11 starts where he went at least 6 innings and allowed exactly 1 hit. And that is more than every pitcher in Major League history, except for 5. Those five are Nolan Ryan. He threw a few no-hitters. Randy Johnson. He threw a few no-hitters. Bob Feller. He threw a few no-hitters. Again, multiple no-hitters for all these guys. Justin Verlander, multiple. And Blake Snell, of course. Now, the Blake Snell connections are hilarious, who has still not thrown a no-hitter, of course. But when they brought in Dylan Cease, it was like, oh, he's just right-handed Snell, right? He's just like more durable right-handed Snell and like slightly less of a track record, right? But man, I mean, this year, he's throwing more strikes than ever. He's cut his walk rate to under 8% for the first time in his whole career. And he's throwing harder than ever this year. He touched 100 three times in the game yesterday, which he had never done before 3 weeks ago when he did it against the Braves. Like, everything is coming together for Dylan Cease. Again, the strikes are there. The velo is up. Not that he wasn't throwing hard before, but he's reaching an extra gear now. And it's really amazing. And again, like, this was the whole point of us talking about him for three straight months leading up to him getting traded in the middle of March. And then that's the last thing with Cease, which I sort of touched on. And then we can move on to Randy, which is just like, and I talked to him about this, just like reflecting on how absurd it was that he was, how and when he was traded to the Padres, right? Dylan Cease knew probably all winter that he was going to get traded, right? He could have been mentally preparing for that. There was, and maybe he even could have been thinking about the Padres, sort of, right?
Yeah. And it sucked because he's at spring training with the White Sox, and every day they're like, you're going to get traded? Dylan Cease is like, I don't know.
I'm just, right. And so, but then for him
I'm just being Miley, dude.
I'm just here, right? He's truly, you know, what the hell is he supposed to say to those questions, right? This is true with all these trade guys. Anyway, and then, you know, he gets traded on the same day they're leaving for Korea, right? He wakes up on Wednesday as a member of the White Sox, and by Friday night, he's in Seoul. Like, that is just a crazy 48 hours for someone. There's no way, like, it's just wild. I remember when it happened, I was like, there's no way he's going to Korea, right? He made it happen, and clearly he got to connect with guys like Joe Musgrove. He told me he didn't know anyone in this clubhouse when he got traded over there, and he gets to meet them when everyone's jet-lagged and all kinds of screwed up and trying to beat the Dodgers. Like, just absurd circumstances. Took him a while to kind of get settled there, and now he's been, you know, one of the best pitchers in baseball. So he's an awesome dude. I'm really happy for him and excited to see what he does for the rest of the year.
The White Sox to Korea, that's the opposite Eric Fetty. We'll talk more about him later. But before we do that, we need to talk about the first big deal of trade deadline season. I woke up this morning bright and early, as I like to do. I'm an early riser. The birds were chirping. And, you know, I look at my phone. What do I see? A text from Jordan Schusterman. Jordan usually does not text me late at night unless someone is on a new baseball team. Okay. And I open up my phone. And what do I see? I see Randy Arozarena staring at me, except he's wearing a Mariners lid. Randy Arozarena dealt from the Tampa Bay Rays to the Seattle Mariners in exchange for two prospects and a probably very good player to be named later. Mr. Schusterman, you were awake last night to witness, to experience Randy Arozarena being traded to the team that you prefer. What were your initial reactions?
Well, I'll first say that, you know, when you saw that image of Randy in a Mariners hat, you had to know it was legit, because, you know, I'm not out here photoshopping things like that, right? I don't know how to do that. It'd be one thing if I was like sending, oh, here's Vlad Jr. in a Mariners, like, oh, this is what I'd let. No, the Mariners, this managed to break around 12:30 Eastern time. Adam Jude, Seattle Times, awesome reporter, who's, I believe, on the trip to Chicago because Divish is doing Divish things. Shouts out Ryan Divish as well. He tweeted at like 11:30, like, Mariners are prioritizing out, like, they are active on the trade market. And then 12:30, I believe it was Francis Romero, who's very plugged in the Cuban baseball scene, tweeted, Randy Arozarena has been traded to the Mariners. And then it was official like 20 minutes later, maybe a little bit more than that, but it happened real quick. And I mean, it's, we talked about it on Wednesday. They had one of the more embarrassing weeks, well, embarrassing months, right? They blew a 10-game lead to the Astros. They get swept at home by the Angels. But I said on Wednesday, it doesn't matter how bad it is. There is no excuse to go backwards. And I didn't think they would go backwards. But what would they actually be able to accomplish at this deadline? This is quite literally the best possible thing they could have done. Like, I know I'm sounding a little dramatic, but when you consider the fit, when you consider the multiple years of Teak Patrol, when you consider what Randy brings as a personality, clubhouse vibes, like all that stuff does matter from a PR standpoint right now, where your fans are so angry and so frustrated. That stuff also matters on top of the fact that he's been one of the best hitters in baseball over the last 2 months, and obviously one of the best outfielders in baseball over the last 4 years. All of that together is an incredible achievement to get this done at a deadline when there are so few bats that we were really sure are going to move, at a time when the Rays are only, what, a game or two behind you in the standings. All of those things together are why this really is a tremendous accomplishment for the Mariners. But it's not that simple. But those are my first, you know, reactions. And we're going to get to the return here in a little bit.
The vibe situation specifically is the ultimate showdown of ultimate destiny, because you have on one hand, Jordan, this Mariners offense that has slogged through the last 2 months and has just been a vibes vacuum. It is not just that they are not scoring runs. It is that they are just frustrating and unenjoyable to watch. You, someone who cares personally about this team, did not watch them. You were not watching games. It's not just that you didn't like looking at the box score. Like, this was not a team that was enjoyable to see play baseball. Randy Rosarena is the opposite of that. Even when he is going poorly, right, he is entertainment at all times. And he is good energy. And so when he comes into this room, I'm fascinated to see what's more powerful. The good vibes of Randy Rosarena or the horrendous vibes of the midsummer 2024 Seattle Mariners offense.
Yes. Now, in this week in particular has reached a new low because of the injuries to J.P. Crawford and Julio, right? The lineups they're rolling out right now are so bad and so, you know, under, you know, inexperienced or just not good. Like, the players they thought that they were going to be good have been bad. That's Polanco. That's Garver. And then other players are just being thrust into situations that obviously they were not expecting to be in. And so now you just have a horrible and now you have injuries, right? So now you just have this combination of, and by the way, J.P. Crawford also falls into the, has disappointed severely compared to last year. You combine all that together and you have one of the worst offenses in the league. Now, Randy cannot fix this on his own. That is for sure. But what it does show is we are trying. We are making a meaningful upgrade. We are not, you know, they could have, there is a version that would have been super disappointing where they're like, okay, we'll make, you know, improvements around the margins because maybe this team isn't that good. That would have been so disappointing, right? If they just go out and trade for just Mark Canna, right? Oh my God, right? That would have, you'd be, even in theory, that would have improved them. You would have been pissing off the fans even more if that's what your move is. Instead, this is essentially the offensive equivalent of what they did 2 years ago for Luis Castillo. Right. This is saying, and while I know the prospects that they traded away aren't nearly as famous as the ones they traded away 2 years ago from a vibes perspective. And then for me personally, where when they traded for Luis Castillo, I was like, holy crap, he is already one of the coolest pitchers and one of my most favorite players to watch. And now he's on the Mariners. That's the coolest thing ever. I mean, that for Randy times a million. Right. I mean, it doesn't get any cooler than Randy.
Yeah. We can deduce a lot about what teams think about themselves by how they act at the deadline. We talked about this in regards to the Yankees last year and how them standing pat at the deadline was indicative that Brian Cashman and the front office didn't think that that team was good enough to add to. This is a sign that Jerry DePoto believes in the rotation and the impact this rotation can have, and it is worthwhile to add on the offensive end. Now, the other element here that I think is worth saying, Jerry DePoto wants to remain the president of baseball operations of the Seattle Mariners. And we have now reached a point where the second half of the season could have played out in a way where Jerry's seat could have gotten particularly steamy. And he is going, as we damn well expect, he is going to go down swinging just like Randy Rosarena. He is not going to look at strike three down the middle. If Jerry is going to go down, he's going to go down pushing trade chips around.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's worth noting just quickly. I would like to talk about Randy specifically.
Yeah.
And again, he bursts onto the scene of 2020. It's one of the most remarkable postseason runs we've really ever seen in the history of the sport.
We will ever see.
Yeah. Like this is.
We will still be talking about that in decades from now. Yeah.
Just incredible stuff, right? Fascinating player. The background of, you know, leaving Cuba, establishing residency in Mexico. He played for Mexico in the WBC, playing in the Mexican League. Then he is with the Cardinals in 2019 during the playoffs. He gets in trouble with the Cardinals because he's live streaming Mike Schilt. Mike Schilt, Cardinals coach, is like cussing after the Cardinals make the playoffs or win in the first round, I believe. And Randy is like streaming it, and then they lose to the Nationals. Then he looks silly. They trade him over the winter to the Rays. And it's like one of the most unbelievable trades that the Rays have made maybe ever. And Randy just immediately dominates in the playoffs. And then since then has kind of settled into being a very good player, like a very good corner outfielder with a lot of power, who offers speed, plays solid defense in a corner, brings good energy. And I think like it's worth noting, he's the second or third most famous Tampa Bay Ray ever.
This is
like Evan Longoria is number one. Evan Longoria is the most, is Mr. Ray as much as someone can be. I think then there's the number two spot. We could have conversations about all the pitchers, about Chris Archer, about Blake Snell, about Price, about Glasnow, whatever. There's a really sad warped answer that is Wander Franco, but I don't really want to even talk about that. Randy, for what he has accomplished in that uniform, yes, but for the energy and the excitement that he has brought to a fan base that is so used to having players kind of come and go, that I think is really important. And I feel for Tampa Bay Rays fans this morning, because this was a player to buy a jersey for, to care about, to connect yourself to, and that the Rays decided to just ship him off like the rest of them is very demoralizing and is a great reminder why. Like my take about the Rays as an organization is that one of the reasons that they don't draw as well is because fans struggle to connect with players because they know they're going to be gone. Now, I know that's not the only explanation, that the location of the stadium and the stadium itself and blah, 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 blah. Right. But if you're a fan and you want to care about players in your team, it's more difficult to do that if you know the organization is just going to ship them off in 3 years. Right. And it also creates a bizarre type of atmosphere within the clubhouse where everyone is constantly looking over their shoulder, making sure like, oh, I'm just going to get traded in 3 years, whatever. Now, I understand why they think that they have to do this. Randy is going to get, quote, expensive in arbitration over the next handful of years. They can get a better return on him now than they could later on. They're very good at making these trades. Like they usually hit on them. We'll talk about the prospects in a second. But I actually feel for Rays fans this morning because Randy is a special character. And they don't get to watch him anymore.
And that's the thing. He's a special character for those fans, obviously. But to that point, like, okay, yeah, sure. Maybe he's not top whatever in franchise history or, you know, whatever. There have been great Carl Crawford, right? Zobrist, right? I mean, Kiermaier, by the way, who just announced he's retiring. Like, there have been. But as far as transcending the Tampa Bay market and just, like, recognizability, he has to be one of the five or so. Like, I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating, but I feel like because of what he did in the WBC, because of what he did in the postseason, this is somebody people know, right? And on top of, but to your point, right? I mean, it's another one. It's another gut punch for Rays fans, and that sucks. And I, you know, and you could say so, especially in a year like this where they're competing, sort of. But that's the other part about this. Before we kind of wrap with the prospects and then we'll take a break, which is, listen, this team is not very good. I mean, the injuries that they've had on the staff are so bad that, you know, yes, they've had some progress on the mound, but for the most part, it's just that they looked at this team and it's what we expected, is that the smartest front office in the league looked at their own team and said, this ain't happening and we need to build for next year and beyond. And we have a great opportunity to do that. And so they traded, and this is the other most interesting thing about this deal, is that we've seen them oftentimes when they've dealt these guys is get guys that can help them right now. And the prospect that becomes a top 100 prospect, you know, the next year or so and helps them 2 or 3 years down the line. In this deal, they're trading for two guys in A-ball, We're going to get to them in a second, but that's really important because that is, and now they're going to clearly make more trades over the next handful of days, and maybe they get some more big league ready guys, you know, over that span. But that is also a very real sign where it's like, no, we are going to get worse right now. You know, I don't know how far down they can necessarily fall down the standings and lottery luck, whatever, but this is a, we are not going to be good right now. Right now. Now, that doesn't mean 2025, but right now. Because Randy's their best player, or one of their best players, and now he's not on the team.
Yeah, I mean, there was a path here where the Rays tried to thread the needle and get better and worse at the same time and kind of shuffle the deck chairs. That's not what this is. Like, you get rid of Randy, that's a pretty clear statement. I just want to, one more thing on Randy. You look at the full season numbers, they are somewhat underwhelming. He was pretty butt for the first 2 months of the year. Since June 1st, he's just been mid-June. Randy Rosarena. Like, it's,
I mean, it's like 950 OPS since mid-June, I think.
He's been unbelievable.
And that's the other thing. You're getting him when he's hot. You're getting him in his prime. A lot of these other Mariners acquisitions have been older and maybe past their best years and more injury prone. So listen, the process for Seattle, which were, you know, has been good in a lot of these deals, but the results have not been there. They have to be right about Randy. I like their chances here. And also the fact that it's multiple years of control and that he's younger is all good signs. Let's say anything else, and then I want to just say 2 minutes on these prospects, and then we'll take a break. Because we and
totally
people,
fine. I wanted,
yeah, yeah.
I wanted to transition to the prospects because
yeah.
You'll talk about who these players are. Flipping a fourth and a sixth rounder
from last year
into Randy Rosarena and whoever the player to be named later is like a win in of itself. Because Correct. Even if these players turn into something fantastic, which they very well could. Identifying a tradable player that late in the draft and developing that player well enough, quick enough to trade them for Randy Rosarena a year later is already an organizational win. Now, that's not something that fans should give a crap about. There's no banner for organizational process. But at the same time, it is important to understand, like, this is an impressive thing that the Mariners have already accomplished here.
Yeah, and they've done a few versions of that already. But it's also, you know, look around, like the reason why the Padres have been able to make so many deals and keep trading from a seemingly eternal farm system is because they're good at identifying players that other teams are going to want once you get them into pro ball. That is clearly a skill. Now, again, what you do once you get those players, that's a different story. The Padres have obviously had some highs and lows with that process as well. The Mariners, as we know. So anyway, who are these people? Because the basic thing is, even if you're not playing this, is, oh my God, what? They didn't get it. They didn't get any of the guys that I've necessarily heard of. Well, the simple thing is, right? They didn't get Harry Ford. They didn't get Colt Emerson or any of their first round picks recently, or guys that have shown up on top 100 prospect lists as the Mariners farm system has kind of come back up to the top of the organizational ranks over the last, you know, 18 months or so. Aiden Smith, again, center fielder, high schooler from Texas last year, in kind of a down Texas high school class. He was sneaky awesome. Shouts out to Jim Callis, one of my favorite humans, MLB Pipeline, the godfather of draft coverage and someone who I look up to immensely and appreciate his opinion immensely, who has Texas for the draft. He told me before, he was like, people love Aiden Smith, and for some reason, he just doesn't have the buzz that you normally get. And he got $1.2 million in the fourth round. The Mariners had all that extra bonus pool money last year because that they had that extra pick because of Julio. They could get it in Smith. He's been awesome in A-ball this year. Center fielder, can really hit. Long way to go. Just turned 20. That's Aiden Smith. Brody Hopkins is even more interesting because Brody Hopkins was basically also, I think, a center fielder in college. And then he gets on the mound towards the end of his college career at Winthrop, and it's like, oh boy, we have something special here in relief, at least stuff-wise. And then once the Mariners took him, it's like, okay, well, this is exactly the organization that's going to get even more out of him. This is a guy, remember when we were at the Combine and we talked about the athletic testing that they were doing behind the scenes, stuff that you don't, beyond just the 30-yard dash. Brody Hopkins just tested off the charts in all of those things to the point where they're like, if we can get our pitching brains on this physical specimen, he can be very special. And we're starting to see it this year. Still an A-ball, he's 22, but all of the stuff and all the pitching data dorks like Lance Brozdowski, who's freaking awesome, you go see his tweets about Brody Hopkins. He'll tell you how awesome Brody Hopkins is. And the Mariners loved this guy. So it was not easy for them to trade him. He'll probably be on top 100 list at some point, prospect list at some point in the next year or so. But still a long way to go. This is still a guy who hasn't been pitching for very long, could still be a reliever because of the command, and he's an A-ball. So that's why you make the trade. That's why it's worth the risk. As much as you can love these guys and hang on to them and wonder what they could be in 2026, that's not the situation the Mariners can be in right now. And they still have other guys to trade for, trade away, and I expect them to do so in the coming days.
Also, just one last thing. The player to be named later here will not be insignificant. They probably won't be better than these other two prospects. That's usually how it goes. It's just say, like, when we see player to be named later, we assume it's not a worthwhile player. Like, if this player to be named later makes the big leagues with the Rays, I would not be particularly surprised.
For sure.
Are they an impact player? Probably not. As someone who is not as in depth, this is literally like so hilariously your wheelhouse. Mariners trade fourth and sixth round pick for Randy Rosarena. As someone who is not in that, this is a no-brainer for Seattle. Yeah. Yeah. Because the point is to win at the big league level. That is the whole thing. And they are giving themselves the best chance to do that this season while they have a very good rotation. I feel bad for Rays fans, and I'm excited to see Randy in the same outfield as Julio when he gets back from injury. Jordan Schusterman, let us take an ad break. And when we return, we will talk about another trade. If this trade we just talked about was a blockbuster, the one we're about to talk about is buying a CD off the street from someone. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Another trade. Before Randy was sent to the Mariners while I was asleep last night, we were going to use the following trade as the entryway to trade deadline mayhem season. But then Randy happened. But we're going to talk about it still. The Arizona Diamondbacks.
Peter Bendix was like, oh, I'm cooking. I'm Mike Hazen. And Peter Bendix was like, ooh, I'm going to dominate the headlines on a Friday. Sorry.
That's what the Marlins and Diamondbacks are all about, dominating the headlines by trading a reliever. Arizona acquires AJ Puck from the Miami Marlins in exchange for Davison de los Santos and Andrew Pintar, two minor leaguers. Let's start with AJ Puck. I'll do this. Here's the background on AJ Puck. Pitched at Florida. It was a huge prospect at Florida. That word huge, I mean both in talent and in stature. AJ Puck is built like a crane. Why I say crane? Because when he was in college, he and a teammate got intoxicated and were arrested for climbing a crane on a construction site, which remains one of the funniest stories to me because AJ Puck is all the way up there already. Why does he need to get a better vantage point?
Quickly on that, I went back and read about AJ Puck climbing a crane, which I really do feel like there's a lot of people listening to this that are hearing about this for the first time. It's one of the more hilarious crimes and... Again, normally we're not going to laugh about crimes here on Baseball Barbacast.
Great crime. This is a great crime.
Now, going back and reading about it, I don't know. I couldn't find reference to him being intoxicated. However, is it better or worse to have done this drunk or sober?
Oh, it's so much worse if you're sober, I think. Maybe he's just super interested in construction.
But so much more dangerous if you're drunk. Like, that's the thing. I mean, the reason that he got arrested, like it was like criminal trespassing, like that's what they got arrested for. Anyway, he overcame that self-imposed hilarious adversity of getting arrested for climbing a crane. Yeah.
Let us know, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Is this the best crime for a player?
By the way, him and another former big leaguer, Kirby Snead.
Shout
him out too. Anyway, okay, so that's him in Florida. Then what happens?
Great crime. Anyway, sorry. not trying to, like, the law is important. I understand, okay? I get it. Pretty good crime. If we're gonna rank crimes, there are many worse crimes than this.
And to the kids who listen to this, which apparently there are some, don't go climb a crane. Like, definitely don't do that. Don't do that. I'm just saying it won't tarnish your baseball reputation in 10 years.
Yes. Also, if you do climb a crane, you will throw 97 from the left side, just like AJ Puck kids. Okay, anyway, and that's what you need to know about AJ Puck. He gets drafted very high by Oakland, but then his limbs are simply too long to control for him to be a real starting pitcher. Gets to the big league, struggles a little bit. Then he has a very good season with Oakland. He is then traded to Miami in exchange for fellow underwhelming top 10 pick, JJ Bladé, who has since figured some things out in Oakland. This is a very underrated, lovely win-win trade here for both of these teams. We're not going to spend any other time talking about it because it's Miami and Oakland making a deal. But like, you and I could talk about this off the air forever. He gets traded to Miami, where he's very good. This year, they try and move him to the rotation because every starting pitcher Miami employs just gets injured. He's absolute cheeks in the rotation. Very bad walking the farm.
As we all already knew, right? Like, there was a reason he had been moved to the bullpen 5 years ago, but they're like, yeah, we'll just try AJ in the rotation. He sucked. And then they're like, okay, fine, we'll move you back.
I was at one of his starts at Yankee Stadium against the Yankees, and it was just like, nope, this is absolutely, definitely not going to work. They move him back to the bullpen, and he's been sublime there, like legitimately a top 15, top 20 reliever in the league. Now, relievers, are they volatile? Yes, Puck feels like a pretty good bet to continue racking up outs. If you're thinking of a guy that maybe is more familiar, like, it's just Jake Diekman. He's going to be like good Jake Diekman is how I would describe it.
Good Jake Diekman, right? We've seen some really bad Jake Diekman.
And some really good Jake Diekman.
Yeah, no, it's true.
So that's AJ Puck. He's going to be with the Diamondbacks now, who really needed any kind of relief help. The gink and the puck, you know, linking in the desert. Oh, say less.
Big Paul Sewald. Yeah, yeah, I mean,
what is this?
He's under contract for a couple years, right?
Right.
So it's not a rental.
What does it mean for Arizona? They're going to like half go for it. They really invested in this team over the winter, adding Eduardo Rodriguez, bringing back Lourdes Gurriel, trading for Eugenio Suarez,
Jordan Montgomery.
They have Erod coming back soon. They added Jock. Like, this is a team that is going to try and make the playoffs this year, and this is a sign that how they're going to do that. What does it mean for Miami? Everything must freaking go. If we employ you, we may not do that anymore by the end of next week, okay?
Which is good news probably for those players.
That is great news for those players, especially in the bullpen. Their Jacksonville jumbo shrimp bullpen is going to be making the drive down to Miami, or the flight probably down to Miami. Is there an Amtrak? I don't know. The Jacksonville team will soon be in Miami because the Marlins are going to trade everybody. Now, who do they get back? Okay. Davison de Los Santos and Andrew Pintar, two very interesting players. Let's start with de Los Santos. Jordan, you have 35 seconds to tell people about him.
De Los Santos, some of the most ridiculous raw power in the minors. We saw it. He probably had the most exciting BP during the Futures game. This is someone who has such reckless plate discipline that even though he hits dingers, the team did not protect him on the 40-man last year. And so the Guardians drafted him in the Rule 5. He went to spring training. He hit a bunch of home runs in big league spring training. And then on opening day, the Guardians were like, nah, we don't need this guy. Even though we desperately need home runs, it's not going to happen for him. So he's like, all right, I took that personally. I go to the minors. I'm Davison de Los Santos. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to keep hitting dingers. I'm going to have the most home runs in the minor leagues. He has 28 home runs in 87 minor league games. He's hitting on the moon because Reno is probably the most hitter-friendly ballpark in the entire minors. However, he has real juice. He is swinging at everything. He does not walk. And now the Marlins, who already have a ton of players who have huge raw power that don't access it enough because they don't actually have any plate discipline, will now have another one of those and hope that he can become a legitimate middle-of-the-order slugger.
Thank you. And who's Andrew Pintar? Not Andrew Painter. Andrew Painter, a pitching prospect.
Not
very
available.
Good. Not available. With the Phillies. It is pronounced Pintar. It is not Pintar, unfortunately. But the Marlins trading for some sticky stuff. Jordan, tell me about Andrew Pintar.
Andrew Pintar is from the state of Utah.
Weird.
That's a good place to start. But even though he's from the state of Utah, he was one of the best youth baseball players in America. He played on Team USA, the 12U Team USA national team with one Anthony Volpe. You should go read Jake's story from last year at Fox Sports about Anthony Volpe. Yeah.
Read it this morning, and that was a good freaking story.
Really good story. Pintar, not mentioned.
Not mentioned. Pintar snub. After you go read that story, just go click around a bunch on Yahoo Sports because now we work here.
Yeah. By the way, right. It's a good call since we're going back to the old employer. Anyway, Andrew Pintar. Then he grows up. He does not become a first-round pick like Anthony Volpe. Instead, he goes to BYU. He's from Utah. Of course, he goes to BYU. He gets injured his draft year as a junior, and everyone's like, okay, how good is this guy really? He's injured. Who knows? D-backs are like, screw it. We love this dude as a sophomore. We'll take him in the fifth round. Looking great. Andrew Pintar, who was a middle infielder in college, is now a center fielder, hitting an A ball. Just got promoted to Double A, where he has not been hitting. Great athlete, interesting hitter, and a fun little offensive prospect, which the Marlins desperately need. Can they actually turn him into a major leaguer? There's no evidence that they've been able to do that with literally anybody. However, it would be nice if they were able to do that with Andrew Pintar and Davison De Los Santos.
Andrew Pintar, make us proud. Enough about the Marlins and the Diamondbacks, the fish and the snakes. I'm no longer interested in being at the zoo. We will pivot now to the Chicago White Sox. Garrett Crochet. This is a fascinating little news nugget. Now, Garrett Crochet, considered one of the top trade targets at this deadline season. He made the All-Star team with the Chicago White Sox, left-handed fireballing starting pitcher. But it's important to understand that his value as a trade chip is connected to his usage patterns. And what I mean by that is Garrett Crochet this season has already surpassed 100 innings. Okay. Before this season, Garrett Crochet had never started a Major League Baseball game on the mound. Okay. He was a reliever. They transitioned to the rotation. They gave him the opening day start. And we were all like, what in the world are the White Sox doing? But they done new. Okay. He threw 6 innings in 20. 54 and 21, and then he blew out through 12 last year, and he's at 111.1. And so teams trading for Mr. Crochet are a little concerned. Like, how are we going to work on his usage? If he throws into October, he'll get to like 180 innings, and that's maybe not healthy. Again, do we baby pitchers nowadays? Yes. Is it a good idea to have a guy throw 12 innings in 2023 and 188 in 2024? No, I think we could probably all agree that there is some risk baked into that. And Garrett Crochet understands that because what we learned yesterday. My apologies. I'm not sure who initially broke this news, Jordan, if you could look it up so that we could. Share
yeah,
that,
I saw. Helpful. I think I first saw it from Alden Gonzalez, but I did see it from multiple places. There were multiple people. Our very own Russ Dorsey confirmed this as well in his reporting yesterday, which is that. Garrett Crochet and his agents are like, hey, if you are going to trade for our client, or me, right? If you want to trade for me, which please do, I would love to. I mean, I know Garrett Crochet has said, like, I love the White Sox. I'd love to stay here. That's fine. And I believe him to some degree. But of course, Garrett Crochet would love to be on a team that wasn't one of the worst of all time. And so he's like, listen, I know I'm a trade chip. If you're going to trade for me and you want me to pitch in the postseason, I would like an extension. I would like some guarantee that if I am going to push, I mean, this would potentially be like a legitimately unprecedented workload increase. Like that's the thing about the situation. This is it was already an unprecedented the moment he started on opening day, right? But now we're in a situation where because he's one of the best pitchers in the world, he could, and teams are going to want him to pitch into October. Like we're going so far past anything that we thought was going to be possible. Right. And so that is where we get here, where he's like, listen, I want some assurances. Now the question is, to what degree, one, how realistic is that, which we can get to in a second. And two, there's a big range for what that can mean, right? Garrett Crochet is under contract for the next two seasons already. So teams can just say, well, what? You can't do anything about it. We're just going to trade for you and you're going to pitch. And that's how that's going to be. He's, you know, going to enter arbitration. Is he looking for guaranteed money over the remainder of his arbitration years? That would be more than he normally would have gotten had he been a normal pitcher for the beginning of his career, which he was not because he was injured and he was on the White Sox. Or is he looking for like 5 years, $100 million, right? That is what is not known. And also what will probably determine whether this happens or not. Because if I was a team trading for Garrett Crochet, I'd give him $50 million or $40 million over the next couple of years tomorrow. Because he's that good. And I think it's worth the risk. He's looking for a 5, 6, 7 year deal to push him into free agency and whatever. That's where, because of the risk involved, I would have a little bit more trouble with that as a team. I'm curious where you land on this.
It's important to understand why Crochet wants this, right? He's afraid of getting hurt again, which is very legitimate given everything we've seen with pitchers. What Crochet does not want, the scenario that he is understandably afraid of, is pitching deep into the autumn and then his body cannot handle the increase and he gets hurt. So he has this unbelievable 2024, but from a financial perspective, for freaking what, right? And so if he's going to do this, he's willing to do this. He just wants to be compensated accordingly. Now, usually we see the flip side of that. Usually we see players do things and then are paid for what they have done, right? That is how free agency worked for a long time. Crochet wants to invert that. He wants to be paid for what he will do. Now, that's how like free agency works. And it, I guess it is how extensions work sometimes, but it is a little bit of a different dynamic. I think he is totally within his rights to feel this way. I just don't know how it's going to function if he does get traded, right? If he gets traded to the Dodgers and they're like, we're not giving you an extension, what's he going to do? Like hold out? I can't imagine that would be the case because then he's tanking his own value anyway. And so he doesn't have a whole lot of leverage here to make this request. However, I do think the request itself is totally legitimate.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Glad you mentioned the Dodgers. I don't know if they're the team that really makes the most sense for him, but I guess they make the most sense for a lot of teams, for a lot of players. But I'm glad you mentioned them because the other thing I thought of is Glasnow, right? Now, obviously, that's a very different situation, but it was a situation where, you know, they committed to him without a sterling track record of huge bulk innings either. Now, much longer one, and he'd proven a lot more. But there were some interesting creative contract decisions with that extension that they did before he ever threw a pitch for them. Now it's in the offseason, and that's the real challenge here, right? Figuring these things out at this point in the next 4 days when there's so many other things going on, when the White Sox themselves are already dealing with so many things, is really, really challenging. And that's why I'm skeptical something like this is going to happen. But maybe it works. Maybe this play, and I guess at the very least, I totally understand them trying this, and I'm super fascinated to see how it works out. Part of me still feels like he's not going to end up getting traded, but at this point, I guess I probably should stop predicting things.
I think that's all I have to say about Garrett Crochet. Jordan, let's take a quick break, and when we return, we will do the good, the bad, and the ugly. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jordan, before we do the good, the bad, and the ugly, I would like to go around the traps. Do you know what that means? Okay. Taking you around the traps?
I guess I've seen this phrase before, but why are you choosing to use it now?
So my favorite podcast, besides ours, is a cycling podcast that an Australian gentleman co-hosts, and he frequently says around, yeah, let's see what's going on around the traps. And I was like, that's not an American phrase. And it's not, because in Aussie, lingo, going around the traps means to visit the places where people gather and talk in the hope of getting information or more specifically gossip. It is derived from like going to like check the traps like that you had laid out along your land to collect game, as one does. But I just think it's a useful phrase to just see what's going around the baseball. So let's talk about what's going on around the traps.
Let's do that. Shouts out, producer Chris. We miss you dearly. Where do you want to start? Because I mean, again, a lot of trade stuff. And honestly, I feel like by the time people listen to this, we might have something else happening. So hit some. Let's get around these traps quick so we can get to the good, the bad, the ugly.
Mason Miller biffed up his pinky. How? That's an interesting conversation. What we know is that Mason Miller, after recording a successful save, was in the training room and was told that he had to go do a lift. And he, like, I guess fake pretended to be mad or was actually mad for some reason and like banged his hand down on the table. And in doing so, like broke his pinky.
Yeah, which is bad. And you know what I really appreciated about Mark Kotze being very honest about this and saying, because there was some confusion about originally it was reported by Martin Gallegos, MLB.com, and then he retracted it. It was like, oh, no, sorry, this isn't why it would happen. And then Mark Kotze said, we tell the truth in this organization. But what I really appreciated what Mark Kotze clarified is that, okay, he tells a story. Yes, he kind of put his hand down in frustration because he forgot he had to do a post-game lift. He broke his pinky. That's unfortunate. His non-throwing hand. And we've seen some pitchers injure things in their non-throwing hand. And my first thought is, really, like, does that mean they really can't play? Like, I've had that thought. Like, is that big of a deal? And Mark Kotze said, he said he can't close his glove. I was like, all right, yeah, that's a problem. I was like, okay, yeah, then that's an... Now, again, I can't
I would
say
argue,
whether...
I would argue that for Mason Miller, it's the least problem of any pitcher, because what does he need his glove for? He's just striking everyone out.
This is true. However, I appreciated the clarification there, because maybe that's obvious, but like I never even really considered that. I was like, well, just pitch, whatever.
Continuing around the traps, there is buzz about Eric Fetty, another pitcher for the Chicago White Sox. Apparently 10 teams at least are interested in trading for him. There's a ton of interest here. It's way more likely, in my opinion, he gets dealt in crochet, just because
he's a lock. He is 1,000,000% getting traded. Yes.
What is it? Coors Light, Stone Pipe, Lead, Cold, Hard Lock.
Stone Cold, yes. And by the way, this is another, got to hand it to them, to the White Sox. They were right. They committed to Eric Fetty, and now they're going to trade him for some good prospects. That's awesome, right? Eric Fetty, we're not going to do his whole story now, but amazing breakout this season after coming back from Korea. And he's under team contract, under contract next year for $7.5 million. That is not something that a lot of teams, that alone is going to get basically half the league interested. And he's going to get, you know, a good prospect return accordingly.
That's a win for the White Sox, bringing their season total to 23. The teams involved interested, it's like the Cardinals, the Astros, the Orioles, like anybody who needs a starting pitcher. So Milwaukee, the Mets, probably.
Dodgers. Yep.
The Astros are also reportedly interested in Jameson Taillon. The Astros buzz is not an accident. We're kind of sleeping on them a little bit as a deadline character. Since James Click stopped being in charge after 2022, this team has kind of shifted the way that they do business. If we hear buzz about them, it's frequently true. When there's smoke, there is fire.
Yeah, and even when Click was there, like, because Crane is just running stuff, like, stuff just gets out quickly. And when Chandler Rowe mentions something at this point, I'm like, I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen, but it seems they tell us what they're going to do. And I totally agree with you. Like, there's no way the Astros are going to sit here and do nothing either.
And this was the case with Hader. Last thing, Rich Hill reportedly is getting some interest from the Dodgers and the Yankees, which, big no for us, because if he's going to sign with a team, it should be a new one, considering we want him to catch Edwin Jackson for the most teams played for. Rich Hill is 45, but God damn it, is he alive with the Sound of Music. Related, someone please sign Zach Greinke.
Yeah, Rich Hill, if he does sign with a new team that's not the Dodgers or Yankees, who he's already played for, he would tie Edwin Jackson with 14 major league teams played for. Let's just remember that the Padres traded for Rich Hill last year.
Yeah.
At the deadline. Rich Hill was still playing last year. Feels like a long time ago. But anyway. All right, Jake. It's time. It's Friday. This has been already an excellent episode.
Our best.
But it's time for the good. Wednesday was pretty good.
Many are
After
saying.
After Wednesday, I was like, Friday is going to be tough to top Wednesday. And then, oh man, look at us.
People are saying this is the best episode we've ever done. I'm just, you know. I'm hearing it. I'm hearing it here in New York.
Are you hearing it, or are you like John Morosi hearing it?
Whoa, come on. John's a good guy.
John is a great guy, but he hears a lot of stuff.
He does. It's hard to parse what's actually.
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Something good, something bad, something ugly from the week. Jake, start us off.
The Mets are the good. I've been at the last three Mets games and they can't stop losing. It is almost unbelievable.
Can't stop winning. I know you're used to saying they can't stop losing.
That's a great point, because I'm so used to the Mets like finding ways to lose that now that they're finding ways to win, my brain literally doesn't know how to handle it. They're a half game back of the Braves in the NL wildcard top spot race. I saw a tweet about how many games the Mets have against the Phillies down the stretch. So Mets fans are just feeling themselves, thinking that they could, you know, run Philadelphia down in the division. I'm sure what I just said will be clipped when they actually do that in September. This team is not just winning. They are enjoyable. Jeff McNeil can't get out right now. The Braves just...
Especially, truly, I mean, last night was the epitome of Jack McNeil not being able to get out last night, you know.
And then Francisco Lindor. I mean, what a thing. What a delight. Yeah. This is everything they hoped he would be. He has 5 home runs in his last 4 games. He is electrifying. He's playing shortstop. Good job. Good job, Mets, I said.
And I'll be honest. When we talked about Francisco Lindor as an all-star snub, I was like, yeah, he's really good and probably deserves it. But like, he's not having his best season. I mean, literally since the second I said that, he's just been unbelievable. So it's not like I was doubting Francisco Lindor, but my God. So he's amazing. The Mets are on fire. The Braves are in shambles. Now once we get past the deadline, obviously we're in trade mode. We'll have to kind of refocus our NL wildcard kind of feelings because wow, the Braves, oh my God, what are they going to do in the next couple of days? So, and they got three more games here, right? I mean, this is quite the opportunity here for the Mets of New York.
Three more games. And on the bump tonight for your New York Metropolitans is Kodai Senga making his first start of the year.
I didn't even realize.
The ghost four off the IL. Remember, Senga was one of the best pitchers in the league last season. And here he is right when the Mets are going good. They get their ace back. Queens is smiling. Jordan, what is good for you?
Brent Honeywell Jr.
Oh, man.
Jake, Clayton Kershaw came back.
That's
gas. Clayton Kershaw came back yesterday and looked pretty good. That's great. Happy for Clayton Kershaw. His family was very happy. That's great. Awesome. Wonderful. Dodgers have we're going to talk about Clayton Kershaw more, but of course.
Yeah.
He will get his time.
Oh, Brent Honeywell. Quickly on Kershaw. You remember our argument last week about whether he would start a playoff game?
That was 2 days ago.
Yeah. I asked a bunch of people about that yesterday who spent a lot of time around the Dodgers, and they said, you are 100% wrong. They said, I was told by Andy McCullough, who literally wrote the
book.
That's
true. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He said, it is more likely that Clayton Kershaw starts game one of a playoff series than it is that Bobby Miller starts
game four.
That
he doesn't start
four.
One at all? Yeah. That is so funny. No, and that's totally fine. All I needed to see was yesterday. And I'm yes, now I'm with you.
Okay, great.
So all I'd say was that was all I needed to see. Anyway,
sorry.
Totally fair.
Brent Honeywell.
Totally fair. Dodgers win a wild one. Nick Ahmed homers against the Giants. Hilarious. Shohei, the Ahmed Shohei back-to-back, amazing. But because they used all their pitchers to kind of stay in that game, and it's been kind of a weird week in this long series of the Giants, who's going to close it out? Oh, it's Brent Honeywell. Claimed from the Pittsburgh Pirates, who were hoarding him, essentially.
Hiding
him. Hoarding and hiding him and not using him for the first 3 months, despite bullpen issues along the way. I am not going to tell the whole Brent Honeywell story because we are at the end of this podcast. All I'm going to say is that this is someone who we obviously know very well. And when you tune into a game and they say, oh, Brent Honeywell, four elbow surgeries, that is something that is just, I mean, you could just say it. But as someone who spoke to Brent a lot over those four elbow surgeries, it's honestly, it makes me emotional to watch him do this.
Yeah. Yes.
It is
yes.
incredible. And I'm so happy for him and for him to do it for the Dodgers, for Andrew Friedman, who drafted him with the Rays 10 years ago, to do it for the team where his cousin, Mike Marshall, who taught him the screwball when he was in high school and won the Cy Young with the Dodgers in 1974. It is just one of the coolest stories. Obviously, I'm personally invested, but I'm so happy for him. I hope he stays healthy. I hope he keeps pitching in any form, and I hope he continues to help them win, because I know he has been dying to help a major league team win baseball games for so long, and to see him have his first career save yesterday was one of the highlights of my baseball watching life. So
it was
Brent
so
is
cool.
Awesome. We're rooting for him, and we'll see what happens next.
Honey, yeah, time, to baby. See the huge... When you say four surgeries, being a very minuscule part of seeing the human side of what that sentence means is something that I'm thankful that I now understand the perspective of that. And I have a very high appreciation for Brent, who, remember, did not throw a pitch in a real game between the end of 2017 and 2021. Okay. This basically didn't pitch for 3 years in a game, 3.5 years, whatever. Yep. What is bad? The Oakland A's are not bad. The Oakland A's freaking rule and banged and
so
Lawrence
fun.
Butler.
They might be a top 8 team fun to watch right now.
Great watch.
They're
true. A great watch.
Which I said this before the season. I was like, they're going to be fun. They're still going to be bad, but they're going to be fun.
The A's are freaking rad.
But they still have a bad record. So why are they bad this week?
They're bad this week because the final game in the Oakland Coliseum, remember, the A's are set to abandon the East Bay and go to Sacramento at the end of the year, and then we'll be in Vegas by the end of the decade. Sure. The final game of the Coliseum on, I believe it is September 26th. Ooh, maybe I'll try and get to that. That would be an interesting thing to go see. September 26th,
Thursday afternoon against Texas.
Thursday afternoon at like 12:30. Ticket prices for that, it's $104 to get in via the A's. Not the secondary market, via the A's. And that the A's have just jacked up their ticket prices for one last cash grab on their way out the deer, out of the door. All the passionate fans who want to see their team in that city, in that stadium one final time, to just raise your middle finger and just slap them on the face on your way out is just so freaking low. Now, look, I understand that this is free market capitalism and that there's high demand here, and so you get high prices. Great. However, just a shred of humanity would be appreciated here, Oakland. Not expecting anything from you. But as Mark Kotze said, we don't lie here. And it's none of the player's fault. It's not the manager's fault. It's not the coach's fault. But this organization, there are a lot of people for whom I wish the best. That is not how I feel for the people who own and run the Oakland Athletics. Jordan, what is bad for you?
Christian Yelich's back really hurts. And by that, really I mean hurts. We had really reporting hurts. That he might need season-ending surgery, and instead he is going to reportedly try and rest it. This is
He's just going to be in child's pose for the next 5 months.
The point is, whether he ends up getting surgery or not, this is just a devastating bit of news for him, for the Brewers, for just thinking about him long-term. This is someone who clearly had been rejuvenated and was like, basically 90, I mean, the power obviously is not the same, but the ball's not juiced anymore. 85-90% of Pete Christian Yelich, like he's got a 909 OPS, right? He's been amazing for a first place Brewers team, right? I doubt he's going to play again this year, or he's going to be compromised. And it's just bad. It just bums me out. Like he's only 32, you know. It's not like, you know, back injuries and something like that's, and that that's, it's really that simple. It's bad because it's scary. That those are the injuries where you're like, right? I mean, by the way, Clayton Kershaw, he's had those for years, and we've seen that's both kept him off the field a lot and hampered him, but he's managed to fight through it. I'm sure it's different for pitchers versus position players, but sucks, man. Really sucks.
Yeah. If we didn't have so much news, this is the type of thing we would have led with, and it's kind of a big deal in terms of how it impacts the NL Central race. It is the best offensive player, probably, maybe, on the best team in the NL Central, who is now going to have to make an addition at the deadline, and it changes the market a little bit. Jordan, why don't you go first with your UGLA?
My UGLA, I know your UGLA is involving someone who hasn't signed a contract. Mine is involving someone who just did sign a contract. Jackie Bradley Jr.
Yeah, dude, this rules. This rules.
With the Mets of New York. I guess he's not back with the Mets, but he's back in Major League Baseball, maybe. And this is ugly for me because, my God, did I think this guy was just beyond toast. And I don't even really feel disrespectful saying that, because over the last three seasons, Jackie Bradley Jr., the last three seasons, 911 plate appearances, he has hit 176, 238, 275. I mean, basically the worst non-catcher hitter in the league over the last 3 years. And I was like, all right, well, that sucks that he just forgot how to hit and that's it. Well, good career. You know, we'll remember him and remember some guys in 8 years. And instead, Jackie Bradley Jr. goes to Indy Ball for the Long Island Ducks and just starts obliterating the baseball in ways that we've never seen him do before. Yes, it is the Atlantic League, which is its independent ball. Obviously, the level of competition is not awesome. However, in 40 games, he hit 400, 476, 727. He homered 12 times in 40 games. And now, I guess he's on the Mets. He hasn't played a minor league game with them yet, but I am just fascinated to see what happens with this. Maybe he never makes it back up with them, but for how bad it was, I am so excited to read about, hear about. Maybe you'll get to see this up close in New York what happened here? What did he unlock something in indie ball, or was he just facing crappy pitching? I cannot wait to find out. JBJ, welcome back to Affiliated Baseball.
Somebody who has not signed is Brandon Belt. Brandon Belt, who last year was on the Toronto Blue Jays and was really, really good. Now, he wasn't hitting lefties. I understand that. But
full platoon, but he was raking.
135 OPS plus. He hit 19 home runs and had an 858 OPS.
Not just that. He was one of the best hitters in baseball in the last 2 months of the season. Like, it was like down the stretch, he had 1,000 OPS in August. He was great in September. I mean, he was great. It was like, all right, well, Brandon Belt, he's old, but he'll sign somewhere, surely, right?
Nope. He has not signed. Now, Jordan, I dug into this, and I know where Brandon Belt is. In 2022, Brandon Belt started the Brandon Belt Fishing Tournament. Brandon Belt, who is from Texas, loves getting out, I guess, on the lake and reeling in those fish. This is not like some rinky-dink little tournament thing. Brandon Belt in 2022, this is just on the website for brandonbeltfishing.com, we hosted 327 teams, paid out north of $400,000, and to date have raised over $216,000 for the Father's Heart Orphanage. Like, great. Good for Brandon Belt. The fish, I don't know a lot about angling, okay? The only angle I know is acute and obtuse, okay? But let me tell you, apparently the fishing season just ended. Just ended. The championship round for the Brandon Belt Fishing Tour took place on July 14th. They paid out $100,000 to the first place team, which is freaking amazing.
Oh, gosh.
Shouts out to Benji Gullett and Dustin Rivers for angling themselves.
No, that's not their names. That's like the fakest fisherman names I've ever heard.
Benji Gullett and Dustin Rivers, who won the 2024 championship for Brandon Belt Fishing.
Oh, my God.
There is a picture Instagram account for Brandon Belt Fishing where he is handing a large $100,000 check over to Mr. Gullett and Mr. Rivers. Okay. Now that the season is over, out on the lake, again, I'm sorry, I don't know anything about fishing. Maybe the season is set to begin for Brandon Belt. He is done. He's a two-sport athlete running fishing tournaments and banging balls over the fence. So I think Brandon Belt might sign soon now that he's done organizing like the Bassmaster Classic, I guess. Again.
Unbelievable find. I am so intrigued. And if we hadn't already gone long in this podcast, which I do believe it was our best podcast of the season, let us know if you agree, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com.
If you hated it, that's fine, too.
Who needs this guy, man? I mean, can Mariners? Who needs
There's a lot
the
of water
H?
Up
like,
there.
Oh, my gosh, right? So, I don't know who makes sense to sign Brandon Belt at this point, but I hope it happens. Texas? I hope it happens.
So, we were once in a fantasy baseball league.
Should sign him. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. We were once in a fantasy baseball league with a guy who I believe is like a professional fisherman. We got to him on to Brandon Belt explain us. Yeah. Jody.
Yeah.
We got to, works for Major League Fishing. Like, we got to get this guy on to explain like the Brandon Belt fishing stuff to me.
All right. Jake Mintz, delightful podcast.
Jordan Schusterman. Great job.
And I'm excited to report, as someone who took a COVID test right before I started recording, that your boy is no longer testing positive, which means this weekend is about to be fantastic. Out of isolation, I get to hang out with my wife. I'm going to an Akron Rubber Ducks game tomorrow. Jerry's going to make some crazy trade while I'm hopefully not sleeping. Life is good.
Sign Brandon
Thank you
Belt,
all for
Jerry.
Listening. Sign Brandon Belt. Sure. That won't cost any. That won't cost Brody Hopkins. You can keep hugging those prospects. Just shell out a couple bucks for Brandon Belt. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for co-hosting. Email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. And enjoy the Olympics, which are starting. And we will talk to you on Monday when there will probably be some new players on new teams. And then the deadline is Tuesday. And oh my gosh.
Look, Jerry, all you got to do is take Brandon Belt and do some salmon fishing, you know, out there in the west coast of, you know, go over to Aberdeen, Ocean Shores, Moclips, Westport, out on the coast there in Washington. Go where the salmon run, you know, and you'd be all into that. That's
the recruiting pitch. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, Brandon.
You come be friends with Randy or Rosarena. Come on.
Randy. Look, Brandon, you don't even have to go on the road. When we're on the road, you stay at home and you go fish salmon. All right. Thank you all for listening.
Bye.